Which one are we talking about? 5B?
5B. Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Memes?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hofmeister?
Aye. All right, that motion carries. We are moving past 5C, 5D is library media specialists. And is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Can we repeat the motion, Superintendent? Superintendent?
Yes, the motion is 5D as in dog, or D as in David. And that was, the motion was by Ms. Hernandez, the second by Ms. Bradley.
Thank you.
All right, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hofmeister?
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Thank you. Next item is item 5E, and this is related to teacher certification regulations. Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Let's take the roll call, please.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hofmeister?
Aye. Okay, I would want to ask if there is, due to bad audio, any reason to take a brief break. I'll ask for all of you that are receiving this, if you could comment if you need that, if there's anything that can be done in the break to improve that.
I'm fine, but I'm guessing it's more of a Jeremy question.
I think we're good, Joy, to proceed for now.
I think there's other people on the line, though, that we would need to hear from outside the building. Thank you. I'm glad to know the boardroom's okay. Mr. Flanagan or Ms. Bradley or Ms. Hernandez?
I'm fine, Ms. Bill Flanagan.
Same here.
I'm okay as well.
Okay, very good. Then let's continue. Oh, Jeremy?
Well, it's clearing up at the moment.
All right. Let's go ahead and try to go to the next item. This would be 5F. And this is requesting approval for flexibility on the use of textbooks for these two districts. Is there a motion?
Are you asking questions? Yeah. Can I had a question, Superintendent.
Sure.
Specifically on the Bridge Creek, I mean, looking at these, you know, kind of philosophically on the Mustang one, I know the request there is to use their textbook funds for something else because they have a bond specifically that was dedicated from their local taxpayers for textbooks, which I think makes a lot of sense. One of the things that I asked Ryan about, but just want to kind of have the conversation here, is on the Bridge Creek application, it looks like, and so Ryan, I know we talked a little bit about this, but just further clarification on, it looked like to me that they were wanting to spend the textbook funding on other items, which I believe is allowable, but including teacher salaries, which I guess my question is, A, is that allowable? And then B, I guess I have a concern around using what, knowing that textbook funding has come and gone within the state budget in years past, allowing a district to utilize textbook funds for ongoing expenses, unlike textbooks, which would be a one-time expense. Do we have any concern about that?
Absolutely, Ms. Moniz. Through reviewing the Bridge Creek's application, saw there that they were wanting to use the funds for operational supplies, library books, classroom instructional supplies, and professional development for the teachers so that they can be instructionally driven as opposed to resource driven. To specifically answer your question, upon approval, the school would be allowed to use those funds as they saw fit. Textbook funds are on an adoption cycle, and so it would be a cost that would come back eventually. And I think that every district has to examine their staffing needs on an annual basis based on enrollment as well as things that they would like to offer as well. Does that help?
I think so. I feel okay with it. I just, that was the question that I had, you know, for you, and just kind of wanted to have the discussion here as well.
Absolutely. Happy to help.
Did you have something on the application itself?
No. I got to take care of my asking.
Okay.
I make a motion that we approve.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bolenbaum?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. Thank you. That motion carries. And now we are on item 5G. Is there a motion?
I have questions on both of these applications. And in reviewing them, I don't believe that either Altus Christian Academy or Christian Heritage Academy meet the anti-discrimination provisions of 42 USC 2000D. As required by the rule regarding the LNH scholarship. In reviewing both of their handbooks, they do not hit all what I believe are eight categories of protected classes. So I think on their face, we aren't able to approve it. The second thing, and this is something that we've seen a couple of times that we've discussed, is the struggle that I have fundamentally in whenever we are giving scholarships for students with special needs to go to a private school that can ostensibly serve them better than we're able to in the public school. And I see an application, and I believe it was Altus that relied mainly on the local school district itself to come up with IEPs, provide services, do testing. And I think we as a board need to be very cognizant of those applications that come in when on their face, the private school itself that's asking to be able to accept this scholarship is not able to meet those services and are simply going to rely on the local school district to supply services. So on their face, I don't think we can approve these because neither school meets the anti-discrimination. I wanted to bring up the second point, but I would actually make a motion to deny both of these applications.
I have
sorry, do we want more discussion?
I have a couple questions.
Okay, sorry. I may have done there.
So I certainly don't know and defer to you on the anti-discrimination policy, you know, meeting the requirements by law. On the discussion on your second point, if a student ends up, if the private school cannot serve the student, so it comes through there, they wouldn't then get the scholarship, correct? So, I mean, there's a catch there.
The way I was reading it, it looks as if there's almost a cooperative program where, a cooperative arrangement where, for example, we'll use Altus. The way I read their application, it's that if a student needs an IEP, they will go to the local school and have the school do the assessing, the testing, writing an IEP. And if there are services, they will co-op with the local public school, as opposed to saying, we have all of those services in-house.
Mm-hmm.
It seems counterintuitive to me that we would remove dollars from that local school for that student, put it in a private school, and then allow that private school to turn around and use local services to provide the needs for that student. Does that make sense?
It does. I wonder then if obviously the private school could not serve the student and they would have to go then back to the public school, then that money would remain at the public school. But you're saying they co-op with for some of the services, potentially, and the kid stays in the private school. Okay.
And all of a sudden, we have our local school providing resources there, the special needs liaison and in the their coordinators and assessors providing services to essentially a student that's now at a private school, and the public school is no longer receiving the funding behind that student.
Can I ask a question of Brad, of if these are denied, do they have the ability to reapply? For instance, if their non-discrimination policy is in fact out of compliance and they were to put in place a discrimination policy, anti-discrimination policy that would be in compliance, would they be able to reapply?
Yeah, I think they would. So the statutory requirements that are in place have a number of different requirements that these private schools that are applying to you at the state board, they must demonstrate. And one of those is that they have a policy, an anti-discrimination policy that complies with the requirements of, it's referred to as Section 2000D. Section 2000D also incorporates an executive order that identifies additional reasons for non-discrimination. And so through administrative code and statute, all of those reasons set out in 2000D and the executive order are incorporated. So looking at Altus's policy that's provided in the materials, the one that it does not cover is religion. So on the face of the policy, there could be discrimination on the basis of religion. Not saying that there is, but the policy, as far as that needs to be demonstrated to you for approval in meeting those requirements, has not been met. But they could.
Also, I believe it's also sexual orientation as well.
That is one as well.
So Brad, you now that I'm questioning Kurt's legal expertise, but you agree.
Hey, I have a whole career with that. Don't worry about it.
You agree that legally they're out of compliance as
I
it's
do.
Stated right now? Okay.
I do.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any other comments or questions? And this is for both G and H.
I do have one more question for Brad. He answered Jennifer on for the Altus application. Would you agree with Kurt on the Christian Heritage application, Brad?
I do. They're very similar in their policies.
Okay, thank you.
I also, this was one other thing that I noticed in reading through that, and I apologize, I don't remember off the top of my head whether it was Altus or Christian Heritage, but one of the two schools said in their hiring policy that they will only hire, and I believe the term was mature Christian teachers. I would think that we would have to also look at their hiring policy of teachers, because that in and of itself, and they have every, I believe they have every right to do it until they ask for state dollars or federal dollars in their hiring practices. I think that in and of itself says we are discriminating against other religions or non-religions. So I think we just really need to look at these when state and federal dollars are going to a private entity.
And just one final comment, board members, on the application. Again, you have the materials, but the application that each of these entities completed and signed off on, the second paragraph on the first page does identify the requirements for these anti-discrimination policies that need to be put in place. And so, again, I do believe that they can correct their policies if they choose to and reapply. But at this time, I think on the face, the board has to deny these applications.
There's no time limit on when they can reapply, is that correct?
I do not believe there's a time limit on the private school application. There is a time limit on student participation each year. As far as the private schools, I do not believe there is a timeline.
Very good.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second, and we've had good discussion. Thank you. All right, Ms. Cheadle, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez? We'll come back. Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries as well. All right, board members, now we will move to item number 6, which is a discussion of possible action on the federal program claims listed below. Deputy Superintendent Monty Guthrie is here to present. Answer any questions that you have. Mr. Guthrie, is there anything you would like to address as the board considers action?
No, thank you, Superintendent. I appreciate it. As I stated last month, the challenges that are facing everyone out there are also challenges facing our school districts. I am certain that we will also have some claims next month, but as I'm hearing, we're products are being received at a good rate right now. So I am optimistic that we are nearing the end, but it's just been an overwhelming challenge. And as I speak with our school personnel and being a career educator myself, this time has been so difficult for our educators, from support staff, as Superintendent Gilstrap said, from our support staff to our teachers to our administrators. We have a need to meet the needs of all of our students. And when you don't get to interact with them as you're accustomed to, or just the overall makeup of the situation we're in, it has placed a dramatic burden upon those educators. And so when I read through the letters of explanation for these claims, it was, I just put myself in their shoes and just thought of how frustrating it must be sometimes that you've taken care of 10,000 different things that month and you missed one claim date, or you missed a fact that you needed to revise a claim. So but pursuant to the Oklahoma Administrative Code 210.25-3-7 subsection 12, forms requesting reimbursement against any federal program section of the State Department of Education must be received or postmarked on or before August 1st every year. The school districts of Wilson, Hulbert, Cameron, and Fairland have some special education claims that they did not get in on a timely basis. And then Rock Creek, Anadarko, Ten Killer, Lindsay, Mulhall, Orlando, Fairland, Krebs, McAllister, Cheyenne, Comanche, Collinsville, Muldrow, Hulbert, Krebs, Choteau Mazie, Mosley, Fairland, the Department of Corrections, and Enid are all have submitted letters of cause for their giving an explanation, and the board is approval is requested. If you have any questions over any of these, as I stated, as I read the letters of explanation, in a time like right now, everything there certainly falls in line with what could have happened. You see the late equipment and the change of administration July 1 of this year. Wow, what an overwhelming challenge for someone new coming into a school district. My heart just goes out to those administrators.
Monty, I agree what you're saying. One question I do have for you, sir, is the are you seeing any sort of pattern with repetitiveness with the same school districts? And if so, are they in the process of trying to hire a new person that would manage these things for their district? I'm just curious.
On today's list, there are only two schools that were on any type of list last year, and that was McAllister, but this was their CARES Act in which they were waiting on equipment, so there's really nothing that they could have done different. And then the Department of Corrections, and with all of the turmoil and issues that they've been dealing with COVID and everything, I certainly can see where they could have some challenges. And they also had an administrative change in the accounting department.
I didn't mean to seem callous. I was just curious, though, if there were some opportunities there. And, you know, but thank you for the report. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, board members. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other questions? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bolenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Maniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. And then, Mr. Guthrie, you have also the next item, which is 6B, regarding shared superintendent salary.
We have one application for a shared superintendent salary. Calvin Public Schools and Moss Public Schools have entered into a mutual contract with a superintendent and have submitted an application pursuant to 70 OS 7-203 for the state board to review. The two districts are requesting 50% assistance of the salary and wages. That would be for not more than three consecutive years and not more than $150,000. However, this has a little different spin on it. Moss has participated in this program before, And so they would not be eligible. So we would only be talking about the percentage of contribution to Calvin Public Schools. The breakdown is Calvin would be paying 58.33% of the salary of $70,000, and Moss would be paying $50,000. Of course, they would pick up the entire $50,000, and we would be paying $35,000 to Calvin Schools.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Guthrie, I know you have. Go ahead, Superintendent.
Feel free to ask any questions.
Mr. Guthrie, I know you and I have had a couple of discussions on this. When I initially saw this application, I believe it was Moss had already received 3 years of these shared superintendent funds, I had some concerns that it might create a situation where if Moss went around to multiple schools, that essentially they could artificially lower their salary by allowing others to continue to get the 50%, up to 50% reduction. After talking with you, I have less of that concern, but I was wondering if you might share some of the underlying circumstances of how this particular co-oping arrangement came to be so that the rest of the board might understand it a little better.
Okay, and it was a very interesting situation. I'm kind of intrigued in the idea. Moss had a principal that was finishing up his superintendent's requirements. And so the initial arrangement began as Superintendent Graham from Calvin was going to, they were going to do a shared superintendency, but he was basically going to mentor the principal for 1 year and then hoping that it would develop into that principal becoming a superintendent, which I think is awesome for a first year to develop a first year superintendent. But then just in the middle of July, the principal was offered a position with a tribe in tribal education. So in the middle of a pandemic, in the process of changing administrators, they were left without one, but since they were already halfway along into this program, Superintendent Graham agreed to go ahead and do the shared superintendency, and it is only expected to consist of a one-year program.
Thank you. I think that adds some good clarity and context to this application.
Thank you for the question.
And Monty, you obviously have no concern about this arrangement or you wouldn't be bringing it here, correct?
No, I do not have any concerns. I've spoken with Superintendent Graham a couple of times on this particular issue, but I've also known him for a while and believe that he's doing a good job. This would continue for this year, whether you all approve this application or not. The only thing is, if it's not approved, then Calvin Schools has made a sacrifice and they would not get rewarded for that sacrifice as they're trying to help their neighbor.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion to
approve. All right, thank you. Is there a motion to approve? All right, we have a motion to approve item number 6B. Is there a second? And we have a second. All right, any other discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Superintendent, who made the second, please?
Mr.
Bobeck.
I did.
Thank you. Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bolenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. Board members, before we move to the next item, which is our budget presentation by the Deputy Chief of Staff and Chief of Government Affairs, we will take just a brief 10-minute rest break, and we'll ask that you promptly come back so that we can finish the meeting just as soon as possible. Thank you so much.
Jeremy, you have 10 minutes to get the internet fixed.
All right, board members, looks like we will give everyone a moment to come back. Once we can see everyone, we'll get started. All right, I think we are almost back. Not certain we have every one of our board members yet. We'll wait to see that everyone is back on the screen before we begin.
Jeremy, can you give me the ability to share my screen, please?
All right, board members, it looks like we are all back together now, and thank you very much for your attention. Please turn your attention to the agenda item number 7A, discussion possible action on the FY22 State Department of Education legislative budget. And I'll ask our Carolyn Thompson to please present.
Okay, good morning, Superintendent.
Those details.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, good morning. Okay.
Good morning, Superintendent, board members. It's good to be here with you today to present the FY22 budget request. As I'm sure you know, each year the State Board of Education is directed to submit the budget request to the governor and the legislature by the 1st of October, a budget request that outlines the budgetary needs of local school districts. And while it's often challenging to project what districts might need 2 years down the road, the following budget request is a step in the right direction, we believe, and would recommend it for your approval. Whoops, okay. The first slide that I have for you today is really just an overview slide, and you might recognize this slide as we use it just about every year, but it gives you a really nice overall picture of our budget request and how it is broken down into all of the different areas. So this budget, as every budget that we present, prioritizes operational dollars to school districts put through the funding formula. You'll see here that is more than 75% of the request is funding for the school funding formula. And this year, the requested increase for the funding formula is $110.8 million. Some might recognize that request as being, in fact, the exact amount of the reduction for the current year's budget. So between FY20 and 21, the budget that we're currently operating under had a cut of that amount, $110.8 million. So this budget seeks to restore what has been lost in the last year. The next largest item is our state's responsibility to fund the Flexible Benefit Allowance, or FBA, which is, of course, our health insurance for teachers and support staff. And that is now at $552 million at 17% of the budget. The budget also includes a line item for instructional materials or textbooks at $60.6 million this year. And next, the line item support of students and teachers, which is the line item that houses all of our programs that we fund at $117 million. And lastly, second to last is a line item for school counselors, a school counselor core that we have requested before at $18 million. And then finally, an increase to the agency budget of $1.5 million for a total of 16.5, which, as you'll note, represents less than 0.5% of the total education funding. So we are going to talk about all of these areas in more detail in the coming slides, but that is a high-level overview of this request. Okay, next I'd like to dive in to talk about a little more of our request for a school counselor core. This graphic, which I believe we also used last year, represents our current student to counselor ratio. The blue line here is student enrollment, and the green line represents counselor FTEs. You can see how our student population has grown. Approximately 40,000 students since 2011, and counselors up until even really through 2018 had remained relatively stable. However, you will see the marked increase here in the last 3 years, increase in counselor FTE that now brings our ratio to 419 counselors for every one student. And that is an increase of more than 100 counselors, which is just fantastic news. And we certainly want to continue to capitalize on that momentum. We think that the increase can be attributed to a couple of factors. First, there was a significant investment from the legislature in operational dollars in FY19, along with pay increases for certified staff. Certain that that has helped in this area. And then just the conversation around ICAP, individual career academic plans for students, and trauma and supporting students with social emotional supports in schools. I think all of that focus has brought it to the attention of districts that this is an area that really needs some focus. So this is the information as of the end of last school year. So you'll note the date here of 2020. We don't have the data yet for this school year, and we won't for at least another month following the October 1 reporting. And so it will be interesting to see what that trend line is for this year and how the pandemic may or might not have had an impact. Oh. Speaking of impact, to reach the nationally recommended ratio of 250:1, we would need to hire 1,051 counselors. So the request here is for year 1 of 3. We've split that out into 3 even portions. So the request being $18 million, which would fund approximately 350 new counselors in schools. You know, in this budget year that we're going into, we certainly recognize that resources are likely to be in short supply, but supporting students who are struggling with any number of traumas in their life have to be a priority. And those traumas are magnified now, may be magnified with the results or the impact, rather, of the pandemic. So, children that have adverse childhood experiences or ACEs, those may be exacerbated by things like social isolation, job loss of a family member, a school closure, or other stressors and anxieties that come with the pandemic. We expect that it's likely that there may be increased adversity within families and exposing children to the anxieties of their parents, specifically when it comes along with job loss or food insecurity, and may amplify toxic stress that already exists in the home. And toxic stress can impair child brain development, particularly in the early years of their development. The pandemic's impact may be both a direct and indirect social and economic impact on family stresses for could linger for months or even potentially years, depending on what that family has experienced. So, and we know that the pandemic and its response are disproportionately affecting low-income and ethnic minority populations, which are already at risk for ACE-impacted chronic conditions like preterm birth, diabetes, hypertension, and chronic lung disease. All of these come along, are magnified rather when you have ACEs that are kind of at the foundation of development. So taken together, these impacts can exacerbate the impact of ACEs in children. So all of this being the reasons why we feel like now it is even more important to pursue funding for school counselors to support students, as often the school district and students' teachers bear the burden of supporting those students when they come to school with those struggles. Next is, of course, our request for the flexible benefit allowance, which I continue to every year I kind of drop off one of the prior years, but it just continues to escalate exponentially. And you can see here really another $50 million in the last 2 years, this year projected $17 million increase alone. So this is an estimate, of course. So we are estimating now in FY24, actually FY22, and we derive this estimate by taking the number of educators from the January 1st, 2020 count and make a projection over 2 years. So for 21 and 22 of what potential staff increases may look like. And then add on top of that, what we expect a premium increase might look like. And that is how we arrive at our requested amount of $552 million. We will take another personnel count, the final personnel count for 2021 in the coming January. And if these projections have changed, we'll redo the projections. And if the number needs to be updated, we will provide that to legislators. Next, I want to talk a little bit more about the textbook line item that is requested. As I believe you all know now, academic standards for each subject are reviewed every 6 years. They're on a cycle, and you can see here the current cycle that we are on, and I'm sure you'll recognize the social studies request from last year. Historically, even though the legislature has funded this line item at $33 million, we try to put forward what we believe is an accurate projection of what the actual cost is to districts. And you can see certainly that the cost goes up and down based on the year of purchase, with some subject areas being more expensive than others. And it just so happens that this year, in what would be what we expect to be a tough budget year, would be a high year with the purchase of science textbooks projected at $60.6 million. And these would be textbooks that would be aligned to the science academic standards that this board approved, you'll recall, last spring, and that the legislature approved as well. Just as a reminder, along with the textbook cycle, academic standards are revised on a cycle as well. They're updated every 6 years. And then after that update occurs, the assessments and the textbooks are both updated to then align with the standards that have been adopted. And when textbooks are not funded or not funded fully, those standards and assessments, the cycles still move forward. So if districts don't have funding that they need to purchase the textbooks on cycle, sometimes they can get off of that cycle and they're not able to take advantage of the negotiated price for those materials and not able to take full advantage of the savings that we can achieve by a statewide contract. So that's why it is very important that we continue to fund this line item and hopefully fund it at a level that will further support districts in purchasing the subject area that is up for review. Next, just a quick overview of the support of students and teachers line item.
And I think it's also...
Go ahead, Superintendent. Did you say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, back on your last slide, I thought it was worth pointing out that the assessments and standards move on, even with or without a district's ability to refresh and provide the instructional materials that we know based on the actual historical data to know how to craft this amount. So that's just really an important point that sometimes is lost on those new to the process. So I appreciate you including that.
Thank you. Next is the line item where all of the programs are typically funded from the support of students and teachers, also known as public school activities. You can see here that this line item, you know, took a pretty significant cut in FY17, and that year was reduced by $40 million, and nearly 38 programs were cut or eliminated in that year. And those cuts largely have not been restored. We are hoping that we might be able to take another step forward in restoring some of those programs, the funding that they once had this year, but with a request that's pretty significantly less than what we requested last year at this time, for a total of $117 million, or an overall increase of $16.2 million. And in fact, on the budget spreadsheet that you all should have in your booklets, you'll notice in the details of the program line items at the bottom of each section, some italicized programs. Those are programs that we asked for last year that we did not renew the ask for this year, just so you have a little bit of a comparison about how this request is different from last year's request. And I'd just like to cover a few notable program increases. And of course, I'm happy to answer questions on any of the line items that you might have, but just a few that I'd like to point out or highlight. First is an increase to Sooner Start, something that we have been requesting for a number of years now. Sooner Start is a program that serves students with developmental delays, ages birth to 36 months. This is one of the best collaborative programs, I would bet, in state government, where our staff partners with the Department of Health, Human Services, Mental Health, Healthcare Authority, all of these agencies are partnered together to serve these students and try to prepare them as best as possible for entering school at 36 months, when they can then have a formal IEP conducted and begin to receive school-based services. So these funds as well are matched by our federal IDEA Part C funds. So the greater the investment that we put in from the state side is a one-to-one match, the greater the funds that we are able to capitalize on from IDEA. The program currently serves approximately 8,500 students, or children, I should say. There continues to be a great need for these services, and many families that wish they could take advantage that are not able to. And this program is all personnel, both on our side and the Department of Health side. So that's where the funds are spent. Next is the Reading Sufficiency Act, or RSA. Of course, these funds are given to districts on a per student basis for those students in grades kindergarten through three that are scoring below grade level on their reading benchmarks. Of course, the original RSA statute, you all will be familiar, required a $150 per student investment. And we did, in fact, meet that investment amount, I believe it was 2 years ago now, at where $12 million was once considered full funding. Unfortunately, and for a variety of reasons, which we can get into if you would like, we have seen an increase in the number of students that would qualify for this funding up to over 89,000, which increases the need to fully fund the Reading Sufficiency Act. So an increase here of $2.4 million and taking the total request over $13 million. Next is alternative education, again, a program that we have continued to request an increase for year after year, a program that serves students grades 7 through 12 that all districts are required to offer those students that are at risk of not completing their high school education. Last year, we had 317 programs with 205 districts participating in co-ops across the state, serving over 13,000 students. The increased funding requested here is really to help with the new funding formula that is being implemented. Legislation was passed in 2019, House Bill 2520, that rewrote the alternative education funding formula in a more equitable way, but certainly spreads across the funds that are available more thinly and requires additional things of districts. And so the funding increase is ever more important this year, as this is the first year that we are implementing the new formula. The next item here is advanced placement, requesting an increase of $500,000. Of course, you are all familiar with advanced placement courses. The funding here specifically is for test fee assistance for low-income students and for required professional development for teachers. But specifically, last year, the legislature passed House Bill 3400, which requires all districts in another couple of years to offer a minimum of 4 AP courses. And so in order to support districts in meeting that requirement, we would request additional funds to do some startup grants, which we did at one time a couple of years ago before this line item was cut, worked with districts who were trying to start new programs and provided them small startup grants. Next is a line item that is new to our budget. It is the Imagination Library, which is a program housed by the Dollywood Foundation. But a piece of legislation passed this year, Senate Bill 1803, this past session, to put into statute the Imagination Library as a statewide program. And this program serves, provides age-appropriate books to preschool children, birth to age 5. Every student that is enrolled gets one book a month for 5 years. And OSDE is charged with managing this program, providing oversight of the funding, helping to establish county-based programs, and coordinating a public awareness campaign. And in fact, the bill actually requires us to place a request amount in our budget request for what we believe the projected need would be. So this amount here would be the state's match. It's intended to be a 50-50 match with private dollars. So this would be 50% of the funds needed to fund 25% of those students ages birth to 5 for them to be enrolled in the program. And then additionally, two staff members added to our staff to manage the program. Next is an item for increased security for our student information system. This is the WAVE. You all will recognize that term, and the coding within the WAVE is more than 10 years old, and these funds are critical and necessary to remediate vulnerabilities, secure the application, and reduce the risk of data breach in the future. There is also a supplemental appropriation that pairs with this item that would be for FY21, and we'll talk about that in another few slides and dig into this request at that time. Finally, on this slide is the teacher induction program, or induction referring to our first year teachers. It is actually required in state statute that all first year teachers have a mentor, including our emergency certified teachers, something that I think our districts typically struggle to meet, and a program that really has not had much funding put behind it at all since its inception. Just as a point of information, there were 3,805 first year educators last year. And so the funds that we're requesting here, this $500,000, we would intend to use for grants to approximately 25 high need districts that have a lot of first year teachers or who need real support in implementing quality mentorships for new teachers. And of course, we'd like to do that for many more districts, but trying to focus on those that have the greatest need first. Okay.
And before you go on and leave this slide, I think it's just important, since it's been up with these figures, to remind everyone that these are the reflected increases. These are not the line item amounts.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you, Superintendent. Okay, just a few more slides here. Next is administrative support, which is our agency's budget. You can, of course, see here over time how the budget for this agency has shrunk. And along with that comes deferred maintenance for many of the data systems that we upkeep. And just to give you some idea of the scope here, OSDE manages 50 different data systems, and one of those is the WAVE. So the WAVE is the one that everyone thinks about the most when we think about data systems in education, but that is only one of 50 systems that we manage. And when the state has to defer maintenance, the impact to our districts is significant. Often those maintenance pieces will cause a system component to break or to go offline, and that causes major headaches for our districts in trying to meet reporting deadlines and trying to navigate the systems that are cumbersome because they've kind of been cobbled together in a patchwork over time. And that's certainly not to mention new requirements that we have in state and federal law for continuing to publish new information from various data systems online. And so we know that those when those data systems aren't working right, that adds to the burden of our administrators. I think it is most certainly part of what we hear when people talk about red tape in education, trying to navigate those systems that just eat up your time. And they can frustrate even the most seasoned administrators. And then in addition to that, some of our OSDE staff members are using computers that are more than 10 years old, and they struggle to be efficient, constantly having issues with those, and that is a need that we just have to address to ensure that we can further support districts. So that request is actually separate from the supplemental request that is also for technology, just to give you an idea of the scope of what we're dealing with here when we talk about the technology needs of the state that have really been set to the side for a number of years. So in addition to the request for the agency budget, which is purely for various technology structures, we are requesting a supplemental appropriation. So this would be for the current fiscal year that we're in right now, FY21, $1 million to rewrite the WAVE student information system. I mentioned previously that the coding in the system is more than 10 years old, and the encryption standard that we use for our data is 25 years old. And it, in fact, can be easily cracked, unfortunately. The WAVE houses an estimated 2.5 million points of personally identifiable information, roughly 1.25 million unique student records. And on two recent occasions, vulnerabilities in the system have been exploited and resulted in site defacement, where someone was able to put something up on our website and go around the securities that exist right now. The State Cyber Command team at OMES, which by the way has been fantastic in helping us with this, and our agency have implemented some stopgap solutions in just the last few weeks. In fact, cost our agency nearly $500,000 for these stopgap solutions, just in order to bring the WAVE back online safely. But the vulnerabilities far exceed that stopgap solution. If there was a data breach, we would estimate the cost of that data breach being approximately $150 per record, and a full breach could cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars. At this point, it's just not possible to patch or continue to upgrade the source code within the current structure. So in making this request, again, to summarize, it's $1 million for FY21 and then an additional $500,000 that you saw on the previous slide under public school activities for a continuation of that. So a total of $1.5 million over 2 years. we analyzed statewide contracts and found that there is not an off-the-shelf or third-party solution that would meet even 80% of the requirements that are needed for this system. So our most feasible solution is to rewrite the WAVE into a scalable code using either existing personnel or augmenting our personnel. So by rewriting it in a scalable code, the WAVE will be more easily maintained, and we would anticipate not then being in this situation in another decade. So our existing staff have current critical assignments working to implement state and federal mandated changes in our data systems. So this amount would be based on a per hour amount to hire additional staff, which would be an hourly rate of $150 for 10,000 hours. And that is how we get to the $1.5 million total request. So with that, I believe that is the end of the presentation. And I am more than happy to take any questions that you might have.
Carolyn, first of all, excellent job like normal. Thank you for all your time.
Thank you.
I'm all about keeping our technology updated and staying ahead with cybersecurity, and I applaud that. One question I did have, if you would, for me, for clarity on that line item 9, administrative and support functions, where our additional ask this year is $1.5 million over last year. Would that entire $1.5 million, Carolyn, be spent on the technical infrastructure, or would part of that be spent on something else?
No, it really is entirely on technical infrastructure to upgrade applications, upgrade technology within the agency. That is a demonstration of how great the needs are. $1.5 million just for the WAVE, and then $1.5 million for everything else that we're dealing with.
Thank you.
And these are figures that are presented to us through OMES.
Yes.
As well.
Gotcha.
Carolyn, can I ask a question about that specifically? On you talked about 50 data systems that feed into the WAVE, which, you know, has long been a personal point of contention for me because it's complicated. Has there been, I mean, in addition to this funding request, you know, for infrastructure needs, which I think we can all agree, you know, COVID has especially shown across the board, not just in education, that our state infrastructure is lacking. And so I think that makes sense. But has there been any discussion about legislative changes or something that would help streamline these 50 data systems that are feeding into the WAVE that potentially could find efficiencies on that side?
So to be clear, the 50 data systems are not those that feed into the WAVE. They're separate from the WAVE. So teacher certification, you know, the accountability dashboard, child nutrition technology. So those are outside of the WAVE. But you are correct in that there are approximately 40 different applications within the WAVE itself. And so I think that may be what you're talking about. And, you know, in fact, a couple of years ago, we did try to pursue a legislative solution for transitioning to potentially one student information system across the state. You know, I think that is, you know, self-admittedly a bit of a pie in the sky sort of request. I do think that we can have an efficient system, at least I'm told, we can have an efficient system, one that is secure and one that works for all of our districts without having to make that change, which would just be huge upheaval for our districts.
So just so others understand what you're referring to, there are over 10,000 users that are assigned, you know, users with unique logins for the WAVE. And information from each of the districts come through their selected vendor that takes their local information and uploads it into the WAVE. And it updates every night with various applications. Those are where there can be struggles that I think Ms. Moniz is referring to. All these different unique systems that local districts have entered into contracts with to let's just use as an example, collect their attendance data. And then that is uploaded and in the unique piece of legislation was earlier to, you can imagine the upheaval of saying all of those vendor relationships would have to be modified or changed. And so in order to not have that upheaval that was met with resistance, instead the compromise was that the state will then determine those requirements on the vendor of how to communicate with the state system. And perhaps I haven't captured that very well, since that's a couple years old that I'm retrieving that information, but that will, I hope, help a little bit to understand the context of what we're talking about with this one, the wave of 50 applications that we, data sets, or data applications that we, databases that we manage. Carolyn?
Yes, and I would just add to that, all of that is accurate. I would just add that the $1.5 million is for the infrastructure that's housed at SDE and is separate from the systems that school districts use that feed into that system. So this is really an issue with the data application that is housed within OSDE and OMES, not they're separate issues, in other words, with the district systems, but this is our internal system.
I'm sure it will not surprise Carolyn that I have other questions. And I will say I appreciate, we talked offline about a number of questions on the budget, so you've been very responsive to that. But your presentation was good, and I have others now.
Okay.
Can you talk about on the textbook request? You mentioned, you know, that 33 million is typically historically what the legislature has appropriated to that when they have appropriated funds for textbooks. Can you talk about, do you have any sense of why that figure, I mean, is it an average of all of those together? Where that number kind of came from? But then second to that, can you talk about how you get the estimate of the $60 million, kind of like where does that estimate come from?
Sure. So the $33 million, we've actually looked high and low to try to figure out where that came from. I believe that amount has been used for more than 20 years, and it predates most people in this building. So like most things, it was probably based on something valid at the time, but then has not kept pace and now has just kind of been a historical thing that, you know, that has occurred. And to be clear, there were only 2 years in all of the years, and it may go back further than 20, that I'm aware of, that the legislature did not fund that line item, which I think you're referring to. So regarding the estimate, we do look at an average cost per book for the type of book that we're purchasing. And I think you'll see in the program descriptions that you have in your book, it outlines there's a different cost for elementary, $60 per book estimated in elementary, and $85 estimated per secondary. And then we also have another subject area there that is included in the $60.6 million health, which is actually being included. I think it's being included for the first time. Vocational education and instructional technology, but those purchases are pretty minor. So we look at the number of textbooks and the areas of textbooks that were purchased in the last cycle. So 6 years ago, how many books did districts purchase? And then we take those amounts and multiply it by the average cost of the book, and that's how we get the total of the $60.6 million. Since you brought it up, I actually think it's worth mentioning that this does not provide a book for every student. To provide a book for every student would probably double this amount. So this is purely based on buying patterns that districts showed the last time that they purchased science books.
Okay. You want me to keep going?
Sure.
Go for it. On RSA, specifically on the increase around RSA, I mean, that is a program that I personally see a lot of value in and really, you know, believe in. But I'm curious, I mean, I know that the legislature, and you would know better than me, it's either last year or the year before, you know, gave a pretty significant increase to RSA. I know this is asking for an additional increase. Are we seeing, and I apologize for this, you may not have it right in front of you, but are we seeing results tied to, we're increasing funding for this program? Are we seeing more kids ready to read by third grade as a result of increased funding?
So I think we're seeing a couple of things here. So just to remind us all, the year that we're in right now, FY21, was an $11 million appropriation. It was FY20 that was a $12 million appropriation and really was the first year that this line item, I think we could consider, was ever fully funded. That amount did get reduced by $1 million for the year that we are currently in. I'm sure have noticed that because the increased request is a result of the increase in students needing those services. And what has changed there is that, I apologize, I can't remember if it was this board or the prior board, but our office commissioned a review of all of the screening assessments that are used, and we actually ended up cutting the list of approved assessments in half, those screening instruments, because they really were found to not be doing what they were supposed to be doing or meeting, maybe I should say, let me take that back. They were not meeting the requirements of the law for being a screening instrument, not that they weren't doing what they were supposed to be. So we cut that list actually in half, and many districts, including some of our largest districts, actually had to switch screening assessments. So we believe that now that all of our districts, I believe last year was the first year they were required to use the new list, that has resulted in identifying more students that were possibly being missed before. So I think that that is a large part of the reason that we're seeing that increase. Of course, you know, we didn't have reading assessments this past spring. So that would have been, I think that would have been the first year under the increased funding. So I don't know that we have the data yet to try to see what you're getting at as far as potentially seeing an impact on state scores from that investment. Superintendent, would you have anything to add to that?
No, I agree, it's new. But it's also, we now have identified more students who were falling through the cracks because their district believed they were using a tool that was covering all of the elements of the science of reading, and it fell short in some way. Or they were using a tool that wasn't designed to be used to screen all of their students. So there's also been a new focus on the science of reading, which is also able to, I think, to your question, we will see the fruit of this investment coupled with that additional professional development of those reading teachers produce the kind of outcomes that we are seeing in other states that have also made this a priority for students and for staff.
Can I ask one follow-up on that? It sounds like the answer... Do you need...
Oh, I had cut off Mr. Flanagan, but Mr. Flanagan, are you... Since it's the same train of thought, Ms. Moneys, did you have a question about RSA?
I do.
Let her do it, and then I have a question.
Okay. Sorry, Mayor. Really, really quickly on RSA, it sounds like the answer is no, but knowing that we did not give reading assessment in the spring and anticipate with academic gaps based on, you know, kind of what happened in March and, you know, kind of ongoing struggles Is there any part of the increase that we are anticipating that more students will need, you know, additional help in reading?
Yeah, I think that could be very likely because this is the number from last fall because those screening assessments are being given, you know, as we speak here in the first couple of months of the school year, and then they have a reporting deadline later this fall. So that very well could be likely. Mr. Flanagan?
Due to the most of the school year last year was virtual, what happened to those funds and what happened to that program during that period of time?
And which fund, specifically the RSA funds, or is there a different, the RSA funds?
Yeah.
So they were, they could continue to be used, but as a reminder, as I just described, the screening assessments are given at the beginning of the year. Then there is a reporting deadline for districts to tell us how many students scored below benchmark. And so the funds for RSA actually don't go out usually until sometime in December. So at that point, it's difficult for then districts to turn those funds around and make immediate investments in the spring. So a lot of the funds actually are used for summer institutes and planning for the next year. So there's a little bit of a lag in the spending of those funds simply because of the timeline for how it works. So, but those funds are able to be carried forward to the next year if they're not fully spent in the current fiscal year.
Do you know what the carry forward is?
I do, because I had a heads up that you might ask me that question. So of the 12 million, approximately 7 million was spent in FY20. And so the rest of that would have been carried forward to 21 for spending for the school year that we're in right now.
Thank you.
And so those funds are being used right now this fall.
So a follow-up to that, Carolyn, thank you for your presentation. Being that we did have a carryover, as you mentioned, in the times that we're in this pandemic, obviously the kind of testing and reporting is not traditional as it's been in past years, is that correct?
No, the testing and reporting will still happen this fall. So we have actually put out quite a bit of guidance on how districts can handle those screening instruments for students that might be learning virtually. So those are still occurring.
Okay. And so there was still funds left over. And according to what was requested in FY21, which was 12.1, appropriated was 11. But now we're saying we're actually going to end up needing 13.4. But if we already had a carryover, I don't see how we are in the need of even more additional funds when there was already money left over in that fund already. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, I think so. And I think I would agree with you if these funds were available to districts at the beginning of the year, but they're not, because so the $11 million has not even been dispersed yet, because the assessments, the screening instruments have to be done first, and then districts report that to us, and then that $11 million will be distributed in December. So it's off because of how the assessments happen, the requirements, and the reporting structure. There is a lag in district spending those funds. So they're not even able to start spending the funds until the spring semester. So that is why I think I would disagree. I understand your point, but would disagree just because they don't have access to the current year's funds until the spring, if that makes sense.
Yes. And so it is by design. We would expect them to carry those funds to actually fund the fall, or there would be no there would be nothing that they have to support their new students who arrive in the fall. It is by design. We expect there should be a carryover. If there's not, there's really some mismanagement happening. It's the only funds then that are able to begin the school year for the reading. Excuse me. I mean, to answer that question. It's just the way school works, obviously, and the misalignment with when legislative appropriations are given and they're made. So those the testing occurs at the beginning with a screener to identify which students are in need of the additional requirements of the law, and those funds then that tie to those individual students. And that is not, it is not distributed to schools until that second semester or December. And then they have the plans to how do we use those funds to stretch for the next year from December to December.
And I think that's also the struggle of passing a budget request 2 years in advance, is that, you know, we make the request with the information that we have today. But that is certainly a struggle whenever we are looking to try to request funds, like I said, that we won't be spending for another 2 years.
Carolyn, have we made an assessment as to the effectiveness of this program? And is it accomplishing what we are looking for? Are we treading water, or that's, we found out that we weren't as where we thought we were, and that's why we've changed the tools somewhat, or a little bit of all of the above?
Yeah. Go ahead, Superintendent.
In the past, there was basically any tool someone liked, it was presented to the state board, and the board just said sure, and districts were free to use whatever vendor they wanted. And instead, it is in part of statute, if I recall, that there is to be a review of tools. That had not ever been really done. And so we commissioned that work through independent researchers through the what's called REL Southwest, which is through the U.S. Department of Ed, that they award these research labs. And that was the assignment that we gave them, to go through all of the tools, the vendors that chose to be a part of that, submitted all of their proprietary information, all of their tools, all of the work to go through this very comprehensive review. I think it took almost 9 months to complete. And then they were able to go through and say, these actually meet the requirements or not. And that list was reduced, if I recall, from 13 down to 6 or 7. And yes, that it is extraordinarily effective to have children identified kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third, for where their progressions on the continuum of reading progress, to ensure that no child is slipping through unseen, especially in a state with high mobility, where our children move from district to district. Having that focus, yes, kindergarten, first, second, and third on their reading is a invaluable investment. And it is providing, especially now that those tools are those that meet the requirements in the science of reading and the law, then we have tightened up the efficiency of what that information delivers, and then children who needed to be served are also being identified at where before some of our most needy students had not been served because they fell off that radar.
Another question.
On the flexible benefit allowance?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you look at the certified personnel, that's $6,550 per personnel. And then the support personnel is $5,690, a difference of $860. What's the difference there?
I don't know if Matheny is still listening. I might have to phone a friend on that one.
Okay.
Matheny, did you happen to hear the question?
Yes, I'm here. Just one second. In your presentation, is that where the question?
Yes.
No, he's looking at the what would be a perceived difference in the cost per person in the support versus the certified.
Hang on one second. What line item, Mayor, are you?
It's under flexible benefit allowance detail.
It's like line 6 and 7 on the page 1.
Okay.
And I think, Mr. Flanagan, did you take the 54,000 divided by the total cost and and you get a little bit of a difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. There's about $860 a year difference in the two.
I think one of the difference would be the in lieu of for the certified versus the support. I think that's probably where the difference you're looking at is coming from.
So the in lieu of is an amount that individuals that do not take the health insurance, they get an amount that is paid to them for not taking the health insurance. And that amount is significantly less than the cost of the premium for an individual that takes the health insurance. And we have more support staff, I believe, that take the in lieu of than certified staff. And so that would result in a lesser cost for the support staff because more of them take the in lieu of, which is a cheaper amount per person.
How many people is that take the in lieu of?
Do you have that in front of you? We have that information.
Hang on, let me. That's one thing I didn't have open. So. I'm sorry. I am trying to open that up. So we have in support personnel we have 34,000 taking insurance and hang on one second. We have 21, almost 22,000 taking insurance and almost 13,000 taking the in lieu of.
Okay. So the numbers are really higher because the in lieu of means that we're taking a cash payment instead of the coverage. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On Sooner Start, Carolyn, What's our history there, and are we seeing progress in the kids that are entering kindergarten? Because we've been going on quite a while with this program, and can we see any significant improvement in our population of our kids overall?
Mm-hmm. Superintendent, is that something you'd like to speak to?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. This is part of our IDEA Part C, which is a part of special education. And often these are children who are referred through their pediatrician at birth. We will have a long time working with these very precious children for many years in special education. The earlier you begin to give services to those who have developmental cognitive delays, physical delays, those, reap great return on investment if you choose to view that way. But it is paramount that those services start as early as possible and often at birth for many of the children.
Can you give us a little historical perspective on when that started and when we started to fund the Sooner Start Early Intervention?
I don't know if I know.
Yes, this is a federal program.
Sorry, go ahead.
This is a federal program. Thank you. This is a federal program that is associated with IDEA, the Individual Disability Act, and it is when special education services began, and then part, there is a split between, the delineation has to do with age. So it is birth through 36 months. This is the Part C, which came actually after, that's why it's C. Part B, which is the at 36 months, they transition into through the age 21. And this is a required 100% match in federal law for the state. With those dollars that come, it is part of the civil rights for children and those services. That is not something that can be undone. But if a state invests more, then they are able to serve more children and receive that match.
And Superintendent, I might add,
it has in the past.
I'm sorry, the delay is causing us some issues today. I just wanted to
go ahead, please.
Okay, I just wanted to add to what you said with Mr. Flanagan's question. There is an evaluation, and it is required to receive the federal funds of the Sooner Start programs. One of the goals is that eligible infants and toddlers demonstrate improved acquisition and use of knowledge and skills, and more than 80% of eligible infants and toddlers did demonstrate improvement. So we do have performance results that those students are making very good progress toward entering pre-K or entering their first year of school as a result of the program.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
One of the benefits of being on my computer, I can look stuff up.
Item number 5, required assessments. And my question, are we using, who's designing those assessments and how are we applying them? And if it's a national assessment that we're utilizing, how close is that to our Oklahoma standards?
So we have assessments in third through eighth grade every year, English and math in third through eighth grade, and then science in fifth and eighth grade. And then we use the ACT or the SAT in high school to assess math, English, science, and then the U.S. history is the state requirement. So, and it is part of federal law that our assessments align with our state academic standards. And in fact, we are required to provide evidence to the U.S. Department of Education that they, in fact, do so. And if I remember correctly, our evidence for the third through eighth grade assessments was some 8,000 pages of supporting documentation that showed the alignment of our state assessments to the standards. So, yes, they do absolutely measure the standards.
Thanks.
And then beyond that, that evidence is taken for peer review. And that goes through a peer review process where that is scored and marked and given back, and we are either told that we align or that we have to improve upon that. And so Oklahoma has come through that process with our current assessments.
Carolyn,
yes.
You mentioned ACT, SAT. I'm sure everyone here has received the same kind of emails and calls I have, but in regards to ACT, were there some funds, and maybe this is a joy quote, but were there some funds that carried over that had been dedicated for that weren't spent on it last spring? And either way, what is our plan to fund the ACT, please?
Yeah, so there were, you'll all recall that we received a waiver from the U.S. Department of Education not to administer the assessments this last spring, and we did not do so. And so, yes, in fact, there was a carryover. I believe it's approximately $4.8 million that was carried over. If you look at the assessment line item five, you will see that our appropriation for the current year that we're in is $4.2 million, when our actual contracted costs are $9.6 million. So yes, there was in fact carryover from not administering those assessments. However, we have to use the carryover just to meet the requirements for the current year. So we have to take that 4.8 and add it to the 4.2 that the legislature appropriated just in order to meet our federal and state requirements for this spring. So that left us unfortunately in a place where we could not provide any makeup opportunities for students that missed the assessments last year. And we know that we had juniors who missed out on those opportunities, unfortunately, from the test being canceled. And we had hoped we might be able to provide a makeup opportunity in the fall just for their benefit. It wouldn't have been for state requirement or federal reporting. But unfortunately, because of how our budget kind of shook out and the cuts to that testing line item, we don't have the additional funds to provide that optional opportunity for those who are now seniors this year.
But it should be mentioned that the ACT and the SAT are fully funded for this year. So no one has any, there has been confusion about that. The juniors this year will take that.
So juniors this year will take it in the spring, but the ones that missed out were the juniors last year. Is that correct, Joy?
Can you hear me? You can?
Yes.
Okay, great. The lagging on this computer had been bad. But I need to do a follow-up to that assessment on the ACT-SAT, because they did not take it due to the pandemic last year, or not last year, in this spring. Now, we have students and universities that as they're applying, they're not requiring them to take that test for this coming year. Mm-hmm. So that to me just kind of, I need more information as to how we are asking for that additional 5.3, when indeed, if a student right now chooses not to take it, that's going to be going to college, that university isn't requiring it. Therefore, there is no need to even make that increase, but on the contrary, continue with what was appropriated for FY21.
Well, so the primary purpose of the ACT and the SAT is to meet federal and state testing requirements. So we're required.
But that has been waived. It's not required.
This is for the following year. We only had a waiver for 1 year. So last spring. So we have to have the funds for this coming spring and then the following spring to administer the assessments.
But keep in mind, and that's where I kind of want to circle back into the uncertain times that we're currently in and the unprecedented time that we're currently in that this pandemic has forced all of us into, is that we don't even know what the spring will look like, or even if they're going to be able to even take it, and we're going to end up in the same situation that we were this past spring, because we don't know if these numbers with COVID are going to force us back during the fall to where we're going to be in the same situation. And so I just want us to be able to really have a larger scope and idea up to what we're going into, and it's uncertain, but yet we're asking for extra additional funds when the previous funds were never even used and we still have a carryover.
So it's actually not extra funds. It's funds that will meet our contract. So the carryover, all of the carryover has to be used to meet our contract just for this year because the cost is the same. And you're right. I mean, we don't know what the spring will be, but the U.S. Department of Education has emphatically said that they are not going to consider assessment waivers this spring. obviously things can change, but we have to move forward as if those assessments are happening, and we believe that they will, and we believe that our team and our school districts will be more prepared this year to make that transition. In fact, as part of what we have done this year, all of the assessments are online. We took the final piece of the assessment, which was, I believe, third grade reading, online this year for the first year. So we are prepared to be able to shift and administer those assessments even in a time of uncertainty, but we intend to have those happen this spring. Which will mean all of the carryover and the amount that was appropriated for FY21.
Do we have any sense at all from data from ACT or SAT as far as how many students took the test, and paid for it on their own versus the number of students who actually, presumably because they aren't able to pay for it on their own, were unable to take the test? Do we have any sense of what that number is?
We don't yet, but I believe that we have briefings actually coming up in the next couple of months. We have an annual briefing with both College Board and ACT where they present those that actual data to us. So we will know that here in the near future, but we don't have that information today.
I don't know about other board members. I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate to be in that briefing, but I would, if not be in it, at least be made aware of kind of what that data is once you have it.
Certainly, and they do publish that information, and so we can definitely share it. Make sure that you all have a copy of it.
Also, because we are looking at this today, it is really, though, not about this year. It's about the following year. So I think that's also something to just take into account. Everything that it goes forward is considered by the budget chairs. The work that Nathangi and Carolyn do in the communication of each of the line items is all adjusted based on what is left, what is needed. We don't even know the count of students for this year. And so those are going to all be factors and variables that are part of a precision that comes the closer the legislature gets to the end of session. But as they contemplate the future, they look a full year ahead, or 2 years ahead actually, to try to get a ballpark idea of where the needs are. And of course, it is our statutory obligation to present those needs.
I have one last question. On the ask for the counselors, you mentioned in your presentation about the COVID and how obviously, and we know that it's impacting our students and the disruption, the emotional health that it's disrupting the students. Did the CARES funds and all of the federal dollars that came to support the state, could any of that money have been used, or was it used for counselors to be able to aid our schools and our students with this time of the pandemic?
Yes, so as a reminder, our school districts received through a formula $145 million, and they had great flexibility in how they can spend those funds. So most certainly at a local level, those funds absolutely can be spent for those needs. And then they those funds are actually given to them on a reimbursement basis. So as they request reimbursement, we have quite detailed information about what they are purchasing. So certainly we can share that, and we've shared that with the legislature. We can share that with this board in the future if you would be interested in seeing some of that detail. In fact, we probably should do that. But in addition to that, you'll recall that we conducted in partnership with the governor's office and a portion of his GEAR funds, an incentive grant where districts that committed to spend a portion of their funds in five priority areas could apply for additional funds. And one of those five priority areas was mental health supports to students in this time. So there were then additional grant dollars provided to districts who identified that as a need.
And do we have the districts that did use funds to be able to acquire additional counselors and kind of where we are on those numbers?
Certainly we can get that for you. We will have that as they request reimbursement.
But we won't know that for sure yet. Mm-hmm. Again, we're planning, and it is, I think, very clear that in what we are requesting less than we did last year. Yet at the same time, we know that the need is far greater. Just even thinking about the toll on our families and students, but also the additional requirements of having to find ways to give different delivery of education all simultaneously. Where districts are trying to close the digital divide, have PPE, the sanitation, the new supports for social distancing, all of those come with a competing need to take funds and stretch them with those provisions and don't come close to covering those costs. So it is a really trying time. We've tried to be very sensitive with this budget request while still meeting the obligation to present the needs.
I have another question if no one else does. Carolyn, can you talk about you know, one thing that I don't see in the budget anywhere is anything COVID specific related? I mean, are we anticipating districts needing additional funding? I know it's unclear if additional funding from the feds will be coming. So just kind of, you know, basic PPE, any additional, like anything COVID related that districts feel that they potentially may need as the pandemic continues. And then the second part of that question is, one thing I also didn't see, but I wonder if there is something somewhere as far as, is there anything, you know, innovative that's happening or anything that's happening that we've seen as a result of the pandemic that we're asking for funding to become, you know, a permanent part of what we want to do?
You know, I think you're right. There are not, you know, specific kind of pandemic related items here. And I think because this is a budget for 2022, my goodness, I hope that we're still not in this place by the time we get to that school year. And so that it's really challenging to craft a budget request around that. I think, you know, the things that we have done from our agency have been intended to be stopgap measures to help districts kind of overcome challenges during this school year. And we're not necessarily intended to be long-term investments. And I think it's still too early to say, particularly on some of the, for example, the exact path that we provided. I think it's still too early to say whether or not we would feel comfortable making a request for investment in that, as we, you know, it is just now being used and we, you know, don't have evidence from that yet as for how it's working. And we know that our districts have really, I think, Superintendent, if I remember right, some 80% plus districts, if I might get that number wrong, but the vast majority of our districts have opted into that program. But as far as data results, you know, like I said, that was always intended to be a stopgap measure to assist districts in trying to transition to and from distance learning. So yes, I think hopefully there will be some innovative things that we see come out, and hopefully we can bring those to the legislature at the appropriate time.
Carol, I got one more question about the physical security of our students and our employees and our system. Is there anything in here or where are we at on that issue? Or do we feel like we have the districts have enough security, or we still kind of in a limbo area?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I might have to ask for clarification. Are you referring to like the personal protective equipment for the pandemic, or what kind of security?
Security, be able to lock doors and be able to secure facilities in emergency situations that are beyond the district's control.
Yeah, I see. So we do have a school security team here at OSDE, and they work with schools on these very issues and are underway in assisting schools with ensuring that they have emergency operation plans every single district. Much of what you are talking about comes at the local level through local bond issues, those types of facilities issues that need to be shored up, but we certainly assist districts in knowing what is available, what best practices, and how they should be approaching these issues. The one item that is related in the budget to what you're asking about is down on line 18, the Secure Schools Program. That is a panic button that the state has invested in now for, I think that this would be the third year of it. And we have approximately 80% of schools that have opted in and about 35% that are live. So this is a system that is an app on your phone that if there is an emergency, like a potential campus threat or even a medical emergency or an issue on a playground, can extend to those sorts of situations as well. With the push of a button, can send notifications to all emergency personnel and even send notifications to staff. So the state actually has made, we've made great strides, I think, in this area. And that is mainly due to the safety and security team that we have here at OSDE that is really helping districts understand how to improve safety on their campuses.
Thanks.
I've got a couple more questions, if I may. And Joy, this is probably for you, but in regards to our ask of the legislation, you know, anytime in business that we're asking for budgets, typically we ask for the moon and hopefully we get it. And but we understand that often we don't. And there's nothing wrong with that strategy. But in light of the fact our state is facing, what is it, $1 billion potentially, deficit. Undoubtedly, the state agencies, including the State Department of Education, will be looked to for ways to absorb those that deficit. So my question is, should our strategy, in your opinion, Joy, be a little different this year? And maybe this isn't the perfect word, but for a lack of a better description, more of a realistic ask in kind of a putting our best foot forward in hopes that we might get more approval that way. We're just talking about the strategy of the ask here.
Oh, I appreciate that question. It is our statutory obligation and there are figures that are required by the legislature to pay. And those are reflected here. It is not about shooting for the moon. If we had done that, we would have a very different budget for you to consider today. This does not actually fully meet the needs. And much like in our career tech board meeting that we were in together just this week, we actually are asking for not even what we asked for last year, but less. And so it's I think a lot of agencies are trying to be very mindful, but different agencies have different statutory responsibilities. And ours is being met at the bare minimum, but in some areas where there is discretion, we have already scaled back. But yes, we have been mindful of that and have already, I think, what you're insinuating, we've already tried to accomplish.
Okay, very good.
Russell. I would ask Carlisha if you have a perspective, being a school leader yourself in the past as a superintendent.
Thanks, Joy. I would echo the fact that I feel like this budget is not reflective of all of the actual true needs. When I immediately reviewed the documents that were available and looked at the line items that were taken off in consideration for this year, and especially anticipating even the fact that testing will occur and what are the needs of schools to prepare for that rigor of testing, from the formative assessments to the additional challenge grants that are available to schools who are underperforming. I mean, I think that there were several considerations made to take away and to make this budget slightly palatable. But for me, on first reaction of looking at it, I felt like it fell short of many of our basic needs for students, especially now knowing that we know the evidence of summer slide, and that has been magnified through COVID and the pandemic. So there's resources that schools are going to be needing more than ever. We've seen many students who have gone to other settings and environments for school and enrollments in virtual charter schools. So school districts are also going to be hurting in terms of state aid allocations there. I mean, I just think that it's a challenging time all around, but the impact of the pandemic, unfortunately, has definitely fallen for children and our most vulnerable children. And so while our state is at a funding shortfall, I think that it's imperative that we continue to invest in children and in public education.
I appreciate that. And Joy, by the way, my question was just, I was just curious. So I appreciate your response. I didn't realize that we had some statutory requirements there that we're meeting the minimum of. So I appreciate you clarifying that. I do have one other question, if I may, for Carolyn in regards to a couple of line items that were down here on page two, Carolyn. I guess it would be lines 16 and 17. There's no ask under it, but there's the competitive grants pool and the state support of low performing schools. Is there any, again, my use of words here, but wiggle room on if were approved on, let's say, some of the other asks that we could utilize money there, or do we need to ask specifically for money on these line items to be able to utilize them?
Yes, so these line items that you'll note are in italics are line items that we requested last year, were not funded last year, and that we chose not to request again this year. I think that if we thought that there was a chance that we could get money for them, we would have requested them, because I think that they all still reflect a need that is valid. But really, in light of the previous conversation here, we really tried to scale back our ask and the number of new programs that we are asking for. To your question about if we could move money around, the answer, if we have a line item bill, which we have the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm losing track, 2 years, no, the answer is no. We cannot move money between line items without a legislative approval. So, you know, that is one of the challenges that that we face. While there's greater transparency, perhaps, with a line item bill, it comes with some other challenges and really, you know, providing inflexibility in being able to, if there are extra dollars in a line item, being able to move that to a different need. So no, unfortunately, if we have that type of bill, we won't have that flexibility.
Would these asks, if we had done them, be for helping low performing, addressing low performing schools? Is that correct? Or is that part of it, or no?
That's one of the line items, yes, that we did not request again this year. We, last year, and I think we've made that request a couple of times, but for our schools that are the lowest performing in the state, you know, we do have some federal dollars that support those schools, but we have many more schools who don't qualify for the federal dollars who are still performing in the bottom of the state. And so we had really hoped to have some additional dollars to help support those schools, because that is something that we do have a proven model for seeing school improvement. We've seen many of our schools rise out of the bottom, the bottom 5%, based on the model that we are using for school improvement. And so we had hoped to expand the use of that model. That was the purpose of the request last year. But again, looking toward what is likely to be the budget scenario next spring, decided not to renew that request for this year.
Very good. Thank you, ma'am.
Carolyn, I don't want to belabor it because I know we've been talking about this a lot, but one of the other line items that was zeroed out was the competitive grant pool. And I know the mayor was on the board when this was utilized in the past. I just, you and I had a conversation around it, and I understand, you know, it is something that you guys have been pushing for several years, and haven't seen success with the legislature doing it. So I think, unfortunately, the zeroing out of that line item makes sense, but just want to iterate, I mean, especially now with everything that's going on, I mean, I think in the past that that program was really utilized to bring in some like strong evidence-based programs that showed very clear results for schools and kids, that I really wish we could get the legislature interested in doing again, because I think it's been, I think it was a very successful program.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the last year that was funded was FY16, and we've asked for it every year since then. And, you know, 6 years later, we, you know, finally, I guess, decided to give it up. But, you know, that would have been where we could, on a competitive basis, award grants to some vendors who are, you know, should have really promising evidence and want to provide a service to school districts, but maybe our school districts can't afford to pay for the whole of that product. And by giving some state support, it gives more access to districts, but we do it on a competitive basis where districts actually have to put in an application and prove, you know, that they have science behind what they're providing and that they've had success in the past. So we would much prefer that model as opposed to, you know, just kind of individual vendors or programs that are funded in the budget. But I realize that's a lot bigger ask than, you know, funding a few programs individually. But certainly if the legislature had a desire to put that back in place, we would most certainly support that.
Right, and during our first the first general revenue failure that I mentioned, there had been two in the last 5 years, and that first one is where all of this that we're talking about, where these things were housed in the structure of the budget, took a $38 million cut. And that, and I maybe, is it 36 or 38? Do you recall?
It's actually closer to 40. It was 38 programs.
Okay, 38 programs, but we lost closer to 40 million. And that had to be, that was just slashed. And so the bringing back of the competitive grants at $6.5 million, if I recall what it was a, one of the things that we were trying to bring back at a time where it appeared the economy was beginning to rebound. But the loss has been incredible over the last 5 years. And then put in context what has happened. I always want to celebrate the incredible work that our legislators did to increase our teachers' compensation. And to do that in a way that is sustaining, you know, that every year. We are grateful for this, but we also know that the classroom, the funding of those supports, those instructional materials, those people that provide the kind of support as a reading specialist, additional work that is needed to bring children to a place where they are ready to learn socially, emotionally, the counselor piece as well, the career pathway piece where our children have an eye on what they want to accomplish, how all of what they're doing then becomes relevant to reaching that goal. These are those things that we talk about foster hope and help them have a vision for how these things pull together. And we see our graduation rates lift. We see our children moving into post-secondary then without need for remediation. All of that is a part of giving the kind of support that you will see reflected in the funding formula and in some of these programs that we've identified here. But when we look at what our children truly need, it is far greater than what we're presenting today. But we are presenting a budget that is a respectful of where we are, but it is definitely one that we know does not fully encompass what our classroom teachers and what our families want and need for their children in public school. All right, board members, I'll ask, is there a motion for this item on the agenda?
I move to approve.
Second.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further questions or discussion? Okay,
I just want to thank,
please call the roll.
For her work.
Thank you.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister.
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. And now we have our last item on the agenda, which is discussion of possible action to go into executive session if that is needed for the emergency order for suspension of a certificate. Mr. Clark? What is your recommendation?
It is my recommendation at this time to convene an executive session to discuss a possible emergency order to suspend the teaching certificate of Mr. Jason Bird. Board members, if you are inclined, I believe you do have the information to convene an executive session.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All right, we have a motion and a second. Please call the roll.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, we will move into executive session. Board members, please mute your microphone and stop your camera video and then follow the instructions. All right. Let's make sure we have our board. All right. First, we are moving out of executive session, but we need to have a vote to return. Is there a motion to return from executive session?
So moved.
Second.
Motion, and thank you, Mr. Flanagan. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Ms. Hernandez, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister? Superintendent?
Aye. All right, we are back from executive session. During executive session, it's important to note. Aye.
Dear.
Whoops. All right, that carries. We are out of executive session. And there were no decisions or votes taken during executive session. At this time, is there a motion on item number 8A with the issuing of a potential emergency suspension?
And Superintendent, I apologize. It might have been my connection. I did not hear.
I didn't hear if there was a motion.
Motion to return?
That's yep. My query.
Yes, we did.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Mr. Flanagan motioned and Ms. Hernandez second. I think superintendent's on a delay.
Superintendent, I think we're good now.
And then we had a roll call, and I heard everyone reply.
Where's the agenda? Okay, I make a motion that we...
And that motion carried. And so now we are out of executive session. Okay. Is there a motion for item 8A? Is there a motion?
Yes, I make a motion for suspension of Mr. Byrd.
Second.
Terry, go ahead.
Mr. All right, Ms. Bradley has the second, and yes. Now please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister. Superintendent.
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Now we would consider adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn, which we...
So move.
Second.
I think there's some delays.
There you go ahead.
I did say aye on that motion.
We'll call the roll to adjourn. Okay. Ms. Williams Bradley.
All right.
Aye.
We have a motion to adjourn in a second.
Mr. Bolivar.
Please call the roll.
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan.
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Ms. Moneys.
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck.
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister. Okay. I think we're adjourned.
Oh, help.
Brad, we're adjourned.
Superintendent, we've completed the roll call.
Painful.